15. Marcus. Ignoring the protests of the men on guard duty, Marcus left camp, heading through the darkness and rain toward the glow of Aracom. It was his men on guard at the city's gates, and he ignored their mutters about escorts and dangers as he stepped through the narrow door to the left of the closed portcullis. Like most large cities, Aracom never really slept, music and laughter spilling out of alehouses and inns and brothels. Voices spoke in a mixture of Sel and Aranoquian, a good portion of the patron's legion men on their night off, though he recognized several of Irene's soldiers stumbling down the street, arm in arm. Devoid of regalia and cloaked by darkness and rain, no one recognized him, and therefore no one paid him any mind, which was to his liking. He strode through the narrow streets toward the center of the city, keeping his head down as he passed a patrol made up of Titus's men. They grunted greetings, their attention more for the shadows between buildings than him. Lightning crackled across the sky, illuminating the towers of the God Circle, and the rain intensified, clinking off his armor and overflowing the gutters that funneled water to the sea. It drove anyone loitering on the streets inside, and soon it felt as though he were alone in the ancient city, with nothing but his own thoughts to keep him company. Reaching the circle, Marcus walked around the perimeter, checking the doors on each, but finding all of them locked. On the seventh god's temple, made of glossy black stone, he noted there was no door, only a solid base, and he circled it, trailing his fingers against the slick surface, his skin turning numb with cold. Shivering, he went to the platform at the center of the circle where Urkan had been executed and climbed the steps. Rain had long since washed away the blood. But as he blinked, Marcus saw the axe descending on the man's neck, the spray of crimson, the severed head in Irene's hand, a puppet tyrant. The moment he'd come face to face with Urkan, he'd known it was impossible the ancient man was working alone. His body had been incredibly frail, and his mind plagued with dementia. But what had troubled Marcus more was that the man was ill cared for, filthy, and dressed in torn clothing. They'd found him alone in the royal bedchambers, surrounded by plates of moldering food and buckets of his own waste, seemingly unaware that Aracom had fallen. Marcus's first assumption had been that Urkan's underlings had merely carried on as they'd been doing when their master had begun to fail, using his name for authority and keeping his condition a secret, lest they lose their power. But with Tariana's confession, he now suspected there had been only one puppet master, Ashok. With Urkan dead, the creature had lost its power, and Marcus had no doubt that it was not best pleased. Would it seek revenge, or would it seek to regain the power it had lost? Sitting on the edge of the platform, Marcus leaned back on his elbows, staring up at the dark towers. Lightning flickered every few seconds, illuminating the faces that had been carved into them. Each time they appeared to be in a slightly different position. The effect was unnerving. "I'm not here to fight you," he said softly, goosebumps rising to his skin with the sense they were watching him. "But I can't go back. I won't." The familiar clack of steel tread against stone stole his attention from the towers as a lone legionnaire approached him from behind, and a mixture of emotion filled him. Marcus turned, opening his mouth to speak, and then stopped short when he saw that the individual was Servius. "He looked disappointed," his big friend said, rising the platform steps. Marcus shrugged. "I thought you were sleeping."
"I was."
The wood creaked as Servius sat.
"But then you decided to go on one of your brooding solo walkabouts, and someone had to track you down. Felix didn't think you would want it to be him. He right about that?"
Marcus didn't respond, because he wasn't entirely certain of the answer.
"Men guarding the command tent said you got into it with Tariana and stomped off,"
Servius continued.
"There anyone you aren't quarreling with?"
"You?"
"Nope. After that shit you pulled today with the clans, we are most definitely quarreling. And we'll remain so until you apologize, sir."
"I don't see why you're complaining," Marcus growled. "You wanted more coin for supplies? I got it for you." Servius crossed his arms.
"You knowing wouldn't have changed how things went. The words you are looking for are, 'I'm sorry for being a deceptive prick and scaring the shit out of you, Servius. It will never happen again.'"
"I'm not saying that." Servius lifted his shoulders.
That's your choice.
Lightning fractured the sky, and a heartbeat later, thunder boomed. Sheets of rain fell, slapping him in the face.
Fine. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for being...
Don't push your luck. They sat in the rain for a few minutes. Then Servius said,
Don't suppose I could convince you to brood somewhere dry? Preferably a place with food, drink, and pretty girls? I know a brothel.
I'm not interested in brothels.
Then I guess your argument with Tyriana wasn't that serious.
It was serious, Marcus muttered. She's been holding back information. Important information.
And this was a revelation to you?
Servius let out a loud laugh, his shoulders shaking.
Allow me to remind you that we are her enemy, Marcus. Well, maybe not us specifically, but certainly Cassius and the Senate. And whether we want to be or not, we are their weapons to swing as they will. Or at least we will be if they get us back under their thumbs, which is likely why you've been sitting on your laurels when it comes to hunting down Xynthia paths.
It took all his self-control not to react. We've had more pressing.
Yeah. I've heard your reasons why the Xynthia isn't a priority. Except I know that you could have 100 priorities on your plate, and it wouldn't stop you from making room for another. So the fact you've done nothing to find Xynthia stems tells me you don't want them found.
Marcus knew he should deny it, should make up a good excuse for his actions that would put Servius off the subject. But he found himself not wanting to. Do you like it here?
Of course I like it here, Servius answered. This is the closest I've been to a free man since my 7-year-old self walked through the gates of Campus Lessendor. But the moment those paths are discovered, we go back to being nothing more than the identification numbers they tattooed on our backs. And we'll have to do their bidding, or we'll find ourselves hanging from the noose.
Freedom. It was almost too much to dream of, but Marcus dreamed of it anyway. And apparently he wasn't alone. The words sitting on his tongue were treason. And yet, he said, what if we never find Xynthia paths, Servius? What if we never even start looking for them? Servius was quiet for a moment. Then he said,
that would be fine by me. But whether they get found or not isn't entirely within our control.
Marcus knew what he meant. There were dozens and dozens of unmapped Genesis stems in the Empire, and the Senate had sent path hunters through every single one of them a week after the 37th and 41st departed, with specific instructions that they were to seek the legions out if they found themselves in the Dark Shores. And the Senate would keep sending men, because there were always volunteers who'd risk everything for the chance at gold and glory. We've had no contact, Marcus answered. Heard not even a rumor of one of those path hunters having made it to the Dark Shores.
We're talking about half of Wreath, Marcus. Word we are in Aranoquia won't even have reached most places yet. It could take a year for them to make their way to us. Longer.
He hated that uncertainty. Hated knowing that at any moment, an Empire path hunter could arrive at the gates to their camp. Chewing on the insides of his cheeks, he said, the Senate's ignorance could be our salvation. Unless we get word back to them that the path hunter reached us, they'll never know. A 41st patrol, the same one he'd passed earlier, walked by. They saluted, likely recognizing Servius for his size, then carried on. Only after they were out of sight did Servius say,
That's a big secret, and one not everyone would want to keep.
Titus. And not just him. There were plenty of men who liked life in the legions, Felix being the first who came to mind. Even those who might wish for something else had obedience so deeply ingrained in them that they'd resist going against the Senate's orders. There were more still who'd fear the punishment that would fall upon them if their treason were ever discovered. And then there was Tyriana. If the paths were never found, she'd never fulfill her agreement with the Senate, which meant her mother and her people would remain prisoners, which meant he'd have to keep her a prisoner in order to prevent her from taking both the quintessence and the information back to the Empire, the thought of which made him ill. As it was, he couldn't silence all of Marin. It was a secret he had no chance of keeping.
What are you going to do?
Servius asked. The rain eased, the deluge transforming to mist that ghosted in white clouds through the God Circle. Keep doing what I'm doing, he finally answered. uplay both sides.
A plan you're well equipped for.
Servius rose to his feet.
With that resolve, do you think we might head back to camp? You might enjoy wallowing in misery, but I'm partial to a dry tent and my bedroll.
I told her I wouldn't come back. The stubborn part of him wanted to stand his ground and refuse to go back, to let her stew. As though sensing his thoughts, Servius said,
Don't be a petty jackass. Let's go.
They walked elbow to elbow through Arakom, then out of the city toward camp. Servius called out the passwords as they drew closer, and the gates swung open to allow them entrance. Marcus's eyes went immediately to where Felix stood waiting. Their eyes latched, and Marcus struggled with the mix of emotions that swirled through his mind. When his father had abandoned him to succumb to his illness at Campus Lesendor, it had been Felix who'd kept him alive, who'd kept Marcus's illness a secret, hiding him and pretending to be him, because even at age 7, he'd known that they weeded weakness out early in the legions, and they'd stood at each other's backs ever since, until now. Something must have shown on his face because Felix's jaw tightened. Then he gave a sharp salute and strode in the direction of his tent.
You're really throwing away nearly 13 years of friendship over a girl?
Servius muttered under his breath.
This isn't about her.
Because it wasn't. Not in the way Servius meant. It was because the traitor's actions had gotten 6 of their brothers slaughtered, had gotten Mickey injured so badly that he'd never walk. And yes, because it had seen Tariana beaten and nearly killed. And there would be no justification that would allow him to forgive the betrayal. If Marcus found proof that Felix was the traitor, he'd do more than throw away their friendship. He'd see him hang. Go get some rest. I intend to do the same. His own tent was lit with a single lamp on the table, everything neat and tidy, courtesy of Amarin, who rose as Marcus entered. He swiftly removed Marcus's armor, then set to polishing it while Marcus walked silently and barefoot to the rear. In the dim light filtering through the canvas, he could make out Tariana's form. She was lying on her side, facing away from him, blanket pulled up to her shoulders. He couldn't tell if she was asleep, the rain loud enough to drown out her breathing. Creeping onto his bedroll, he sat, silently cursing when his knees cracked.
I thought you weren't coming back tonight.
Shit. I changed my mind.
Lying on his back, he stared at the canvas above him, knowing there wasn't a chance of him falling asleep. Tariana was silent for long enough that he thought she must have succumbed to exhaustion, then she abruptly rolled over to face him, a wet braid smacking him across the chest.
Are we done? Because if we are, I just want to know, so...
She broke off, her voice cracking with a stifled sob that made his chest ache.
So that I know.
It didn't feel over. Not with the way he was achingly aware of her presence. With the way he wanted to pull her into his arms. With the way he wanted to kiss her and tell her it didn't matter what she'd done. Except what if the next time her actions had real consequences? What if they resulted in his men being hurt or killed?
I can't do this if I can't trust you,
he said softly. And you shouldn't do it if you can't trust me. Tariana didn't answer, and he felt sick, his stomach in ropes and his skin clammy, because he didn't want it to be over, didn't want to lose her when he'd only just gotten her back. Then her fingers interlaced with his, and she whispered,
Then maybe trust is where we need to start.